Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, where we'll talk with real estate investors, entrepreneurs, business leaders, athletes, and more to inspire you with their success stories so you can work hard, never give up, and dream huge. And now, let's start the show.
Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Dream Huge Podcast, hosted by JP for three, John Pavlansky.
What is going on, Pete?
Nothing, man. Excited for this one. Super excited to catch up with an old friend I haven't really spoke to in years, and he's got an amazing story. Can't wait to tell you about him. Also on the podcast, hosted by Justin Bigelow. What's up, Biggie? Okay, par for the course. Yeah, we've probably done, what is this? We're probably approaching 100 podcasts, I would say, 75 or 100. And every time we get on, we're like, settings, you know, let's get it going. But that's how you roll, man. And so we've got Mark Gray behind the scenes. We got myself, Pete Peterson, and folks, we don't always talk real estate. We love talking with other huge dreamers, people who are out there all over the world dreaming huge, movers, shakers, influencers, people that can share stories to help motivate and inspire you to dream huge as well. So today I have my college roommate, my freshman and sophomore college roommate from Hollywood, California. We have Alex Capaldi. He is a production manager / production supervisor with everything Hollywood you can think of. And we're going to break all that down here in a second. How are you doing, my man, Alex?
Doing good. We're at the end of the strike, these SAG strikes that have been going on. So we're excited to have things start getting back to normal, and we'll see how that goes. It's been interesting.
Yeah. So when you say getting back to normal, so let's just jump right into that.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about what you do when you are operating at normal terms, and what it is that you do.
So as a production supervisor / production manager, I'm in charge of staffing the movie and basically making sure that everybody gets what they need. And sometimes that includes, you know, making sure we don't spend too much money, which is always a battle, because I'm essentially middle management, or either you'll hear people talk about above the line or below the line in regards to, you know, Hollywood sometimes. And the production manager is the top of the below the line. So above the line is like your actors, your producers, and all that other stuff. And then you get into the actual management side of things. And that's usually where I fall. So it's, you know, it's middle management, really. It's dealing with the more important people coming up to me saying, we're spending too much on this. You need to figure that out. And then I go and try and tell people to stop spending money. And then I go back to my bosses and I say, well, you know, we can cut this out. And they're like, yeah, but that's only like, you know, that's not that expensive. So we'll just keep going. It's like, great. I don't know what I'm doing then.
Right. Just so, and what's crazy is each one of these productions is like a corporation in itself, right? So for you know, viewers, listeners out there, my man Alex Capaldi, production manager, production supervisor on such notable movies as Captain America: Winter Soldier, Spider-Man: Homecoming, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, baby. So,
yeah,
these motion pictures have huge budgets. I mean, and so you are basically in the middle of a corporation who has a job which entails an average budget of
On the low side, probably $5 million. On the higher side, you know, 150-200 million. It's so what I usually tell people is my job only sounds interesting because some of the people I work with, you know them by name. But that doesn't necessarily mean I'm interacting, you know, with the stars of the movie. I generally don't, just because that's not my job, as is the, I guess, blunt way of putting it. You know, occasionally if there's an issue where, you know, we have to figure out how to pay someone on one of the actors' staff and they don't speak English and it's, you know, it's challenges, you know, it's like, well, where do I find someone who can speak Portuguese? I need to figure out how to get this person paid because they're doing a job for one of our coworkers. And it's really any, you know, we do stuff like that. And then it's also, you know, trying to figure out, oh, crap, we need a 50-foot technocrane on Monday, tomorrow. You know, it sounds really interesting, and in a lot of ways it is, but in a lot of ways it's just, it's the same logistical nightmares that we all deal with, that everybody deals with.
Right, except you're making Hollywood right. movies, and we right. are not.
There is that aspect of it, but it is, you know, it's, I've been doing this for so long. It's a job. It's yeah. a small job, but it's still a job.
Yeah. So you mentioned working yeah. alongside those famous names. So who were some of your favorite, and you say you may not necessarily be working right with them, yeah. but I know that you have from talking to you in the past. So who are some of your favorites that you've worked
Margot
with?
Robbie, big names. Hands down. You know, one of my friends posted something on their Instagram. It was like, you know, some whatever from a red carpet. And I was like, honestly, like, just so you know, that is 100% Margot Robbie right there. She is that kind, sweet, you know, personable, you know, person. And she was just fantastic to work with, fantastic yeah. to be around, fantastic to watch her work and do her thing. The, you know, everybody, of course, also wants to hear all like the salacious stuff, like who is the jerk? There,
yeah.
A lot of times you kind of have to, like when I hear a story, we'll talk, you know, we'll just say specifically Christian Bale. There was that audio that leaked like probably about 10, 15 years ago of him yelling at somebody on set, and it really makes him look bad. And, you know, a lot of people have heard the audio and heard what he's saying. And a friend of mine was working on that movie. So when I heard the audio, found out what movie it came from, and talked to my friend, you know, I was like, what really happened? And, you know, he explained the real story. And it's like, oh, Christian actually was not being unreasonable at that time. But we only ever hear the salacious yeah. stuff. We only hear that he's being this loud, you know, yelling at another crew member kind of thing, when really it's like this person was doing things consistently that was getting in the way of the actors doing their work. And on multiple occasions, you know, Christian tried to do the right thing and say like, hey, can you talk to him? Can you let him know, like, this is our time to work? We give them their time to work. And just nobody would listen and corral this other person. And then, you know, we're all people. We all have our bad days. We all have our good days. And unfortunately, what everybody heard is just that little bit of a bad day. When it's like,
mm-hmm. Sure. So, sort of recap super that. Cool. Margot Robbie is super totally cool. And so is Christian Bale. He just was caught on tape making a point to someone, which was actually a valid point.
I've done the same thing. Like,
all right. So,
you know, like I was.
Sure. Yeah.
It was on a home renovation reality show. And as I'm sure you're aware, when you know, if you get a property and you're trying to fix it up and get it ready for someone to move into, you know, I'd spent this time like talking to the vendor, like, this is when we need the stuff. This is when it has to be there. And this is what we need. And, you know, and it came day of and our supplies were not showing up. And I got the vendor on the phone and they're like, well, we said it would be there, you know, the morning of, and like our morning drop offs are between 6 a.m. and 12 p.m., you know, like in noon. And I said, look, this entire time I've been telling you for weeks now, like, this is when I need it. This is what we need it. And you and I both know 11:59 is not the morning. And at somewhere during that conversation, apparently my producer had walked out of the house, heard me talking to the vendor, and then just turned around and went right back in. I was like, I'll get to him later. It's, you know, like we have our bad days, but at the same time, it's like, I've been trying to explain to you, like, this is when I need this. Like, why isn't it here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has their bad days at work. A lot of it is just managing those bad days.
Yeah.
So you're still not going to tell us who the asshole was, the biggest asshole actor.
Yeah.
Well, and to keep this in context, like when you're a movie star, people are pushing and pulling you from all directions. It would almost take extra effort to me if you're going to be like a Margot Robbie, like a super sweetheart. It's going to take her extra effort because she's spread super thin, right? Like all of them are. So I could imagine some may not necessarily be assholes, but you only have so much time in the day.
Yeah, you only have so much time in the day. And, you know, and I understand that, you know, everybody above the line has a lot on their plate and a lot on their shoulders that they have to be responsible for. And a lot of like the, you know, little maybe like snippy behavior, whatever you want to call it. I usually give it a pass because I'm aware of everything that everybody's doing. You know, I know a lot of information. I hear a lot of information that a lot of people don't hear. And then I just, you know, filter that. And if someone's having a bad day, it's like, I realize, oh, we're having issues with this. So they're just, now's not a good time. Most of the people, you know, like, so everybody's human. Everybody has their bad days. I can't really think of anybody that's really been a nightmare to deal with.
They're all in the business, so yeah. They're going to be somewhat reasonable, right? Because they're successful. You have to be able to work well with others and whatnot.
Anybody who is an actual giant pain in the butt, you probably don't remember who they are because they're not doing anything anymore. They just have their ways of being filtered out of the limelight. And it's, you know, because ultimately, regardless of how great an actor somebody might be or how great a producer might be, they will eventually, you know, word spreads, they're difficult to work with, and you just don't hear from them after a while.
So are you generally like on set at Universal Studios, or are you traveling the country, what does that look like for you?
There is a big film community down here. I think we're the third largest in the nation, so it's basically New York, LA, and Atlanta as far as like the most productions. So we live down here, we work down here. You know, sometimes we're on a studio lot, sometimes we're in the middle of a neighborhood shooting at like 3 a.m. It depends on what the show calls for. You know, like on Doctor Sleep, we had to recreate the exterior of the hotel from The Shining, so we do that on stage. And that lets us control all the lighting, all the environment. You know, we get to put down our fake snow, we don't have to worry about, you know, people taking pictures and posting them, you know, ahead of the show coming out. And then other times you need a very specific looking neighborhood. And the only way to get that is to either go to that actual city or find a place in the city we're shooting in that looks close to that. Avengers is a good one because we duplicated downtown DC in downtown Cleveland. There's a lot. If you watch the first Avengers with me sitting next to you, I can be like, that's Cleveland, that's Cleveland, that's Cleveland, that's Sandusky, that's Pittsburgh, that's Cleveland. It's amazing. It really is, because you like the way that the directors and the producers and everybody creates these environments, and then you completely forget where you are and you realize like this is amazing. And then, you know, if you know somebody who was there, you're like, that's actually the end of the Detroit Shoreway, where, you know, you get dumps you off onto Clifton. And it's interesting. It really is.
How tight are these productions? Like, after you finish one and you're watching it, are you noticing like multiple screw ups, or that we would never even notice?
Or are these productions pretty tight? I mean, there's always something that. So that's another thing. There's always something that slips through, and sometimes it works out in the benefit of the show, and sometimes it doesn't, and it slips through. Like, I think there was that coffee cup in Game of Thrones that was floating all over the internet a couple of years ago, and it's like, there had to have been somebody along the way who looked at that shot in editing and just said, I'm not going to say anything to anybody. We're going to see what happens. I'm going to see if someone else catches it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's called power.
Well, sometimes they're like cool little Easter eggs.
They are. Probably the most interesting one I can think of. So I was working on a show, you know, this is when I still lived in LA, and our script supervisor, and this is the guy that is in charge of all of the continuity. Like, whenever you're setting up a shot, you know, if you shoot part of the shot before lunch and then you come back to it after lunch, the script supervisor is the person who's sitting there saying, okay, you know, she was holding the cigarette in the left hand, it was burned halfway down, you know, and her hair looked like this, and whatever. They make sure all the continuity stays consistent so it looks believable. Okay. He also was the guy who worked a lot with Christopher Nolan. And when I was working with him, was when Inception came out. And so the Monday after Inception's opening weekend, everybody on set had seen the movie and were going up to him, were like, what about this? What about that? What did you know, what did he mean by this happening? And he said a lot of times, you know, the director would come up to him and say,
yes,
what do you think? And then just walk away. But there's the end of the movie. If you remember, there was the whole top spinning top aspect of the movie. And
yes,
there's a little wobble at the end of the movie that happens. So he said the top wasn't supposed to do that. Like the top was just supposed to spin, but then for whatever reason, it wobbled a little and that's what stayed in. And that's, and again, So the other thing is, there's a chance that story was just made up also. I don't know. That's what he told us, you know?
But in other words, he wanted it to be interpreted
or
to the
happy
viewer.
Accident that he just decided, you know what, this is going to be great. We're going to leave that in. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that movie like 10 times. I've dissected it. I got it's special to me because I love the topic, the whole theme of it all and Christopher Nolan and everything.
Mm.
But it came out on my birthday, my actual birthday.
Yeah.
So I had to go get the Steelbook and everything.
I mean,
I watched the movie I did. So like for me, most people don't know this, but before I even got into this real estate thing, I went to college for 1 year and I was trying to follow my cousin's view of life. And he was in film. He's actually in the film industry, similar to you are on the, you know, the inside part of it, the whole thing. And I was like, oh, I'm going to follow film. So I went to Ohio State, took a film class and actually did an analysis of a scene. Breaking it all down with the lighting, the shots, the sound, all the elements that go into a shot. I broke down one of those scenes. I think it was when they were crashing on the beach of that movie. The film is attention to detail. Every time I took that class, it's like, you're going to look at movies differently. But hopefully you don't look at them too differently.
See, Justin, maybe you're made for Hollywood. This is bringing you back around.
Well, I mean, I just love the film. It really dives into the attention to detail and really diving into like the magic of a movie. And you're seeing the magic, and you can see it by just getting a little bit of knowledge, and then just
it's looking. It's amazing. It really can be amazing just because of what they're able to create. And Nolan is a good example of a fantastic director, fantastic modern age director who is, you know, creating a legacy for himself and is, you know, it's incredible to watch what he does. I've never worked with him, but you know, we hear stories all the time and it's just, he's a genius. Yeah.
Hey, Alex. How do you get into Hollywood and how do you become and stay successful once you are there?
I'm not the right person to really talk about how to get in because I just, you know, got lucky. I got in because I was packing up my dorm at the end of my junior year in college, living in Twin Towers at Kent State University. And I was all lined up to go be a lifeguard again. It was going to be my second summer being a lifeguard at an outdoor pool. It was going to be my last summer before graduating, where it was like, you know, this is really like the last summer I have to like not have responsibilities. And a friend of mine called me and said, I'm working on this movie in Cleveland. The producer needs an assistant. I think you would get along great with him. I think you should do this. And my initial internal thought was, working on a movie sounds dumb. I don't want to do that. But I have a hard time saying no. So I sent in my resume, got the job, and was just sort of like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. This is interesting to watch. And the way you get in is the industry is very much about who you know. So you have to have, you don't have to have a connection, but you at least have to have the tenacity to start trying to meet people and figuring out how to get in front of somebody. And especially early on, it's a lot of just saying yes. You know, if someone says, I need you to drive this dog across the country for me, your answer is great, let's do it. And you just start, you know, being a solid worker, and you know, you show up early and you stay late, and you know, it's like all the standard stuff that everybody hears about working hard and making a name for yourself. It's a different industry than a lot of others in that your jobs generally last anywhere from like a couple of days to 9-10 months. And then you're back to doing nothing again. And the what we're I think we're actually about to see now in the film industry, because Atlanta has only really ever known this very boom environment where you're leaving a show to go start another show. And you know, a lot of times when I started out, you do a job, you work on a movie, and then you have a couple of weeks, a couple of months off, and then you get hired on another one. And it's just been so busy the past 10 years that a lot of guys, you know, towards the end of, I think it was like 2021 or 22, I was working on a show, and I was making the deal with our gaffer, who's the guy in charge of all the lights. And, you know, it's like, all right, well, this is when we want you to start. When are you done on the show you're on now? So I'm negotiating his exit from his current show so then he can come and be with us. And he's like, okay, well, then also I'm supposed to start this other show. So I'm leaving you guys early to go do that one. And that was the first time I ever was negotiating someone's, you know, start and end to the show, because he already had another job. And now with this giant sea change in the industry that is multi-layered, it's going to be interesting, because I think it might go back to a more ebb and flow of, like, you're going to be on a show, you're going to have time off, then you're going to do another show, and you're not going to have this, you know, this jumping from show to show to show. We'll see.
What were some of the big changes that came about from that?
It's hard to say officially now, but the rising interest rates on loans is affecting the amount, you know, everybody borrows money to make things, whether you're buying a house, building a house, buying a car, making a movie. So your interest rates are going up. It's going to be harder for people to just lend money to shows. You know, even for the bigger studios, everyone is going to be more selective, I think, with what they produce. You know, you're not just going to end up with some regurgitated plot line that everybody else has done. We'll see. It's really hard to say, because it's such a fickle industry. And with all of this, you know, with the SAG strikes that just happened and the writer strikes, and the IATSE contract is coming up for, you know, renewal in probably about 6 or 8 months, I think. You know, we're going to see how that goes, but it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how everything really shakes out. I could be completely wrong. We could just go back into, you know, a constant boom of, like, everybody's working and nobody's available. Or we could be going into a situation where, you know, production is reduced by a significant amount. And then we'll see.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like for you, Alex? Like, do you work for a specific studio, or are you more like a general contractor, 1099, you connect with these guys? And kind
it's more like a general contractor. We do go on payroll, so we don't 1099. You know, the industry does have that layer in there for us, to where, you know, we go on payroll and we get our, you know, our deductions taken out. And, you know, if you're in a union, then they pay your union fringes and for your health insurance and all that other fun stuff. But yeah, it's word of mouth. It's job to job. And, you know, sometimes, like, this past strike, like, I just finished a job, because I don't know what's going on with it. But I basically haven't, you know, really worked steadily since December of last year. And some of that is by choice, because my wife was working, and then I was like, all right, well, I don't want to, you know, one option would have been to go out of town, as I didn't want to go out of town at the time. And then as the time went on earlier in the year, it's just, you see, like, a lot of shows were slowing down, a lot of studios were slowing down, because we knew these strikes were coming up, and also the interest rates kept going up. So a lot of the smaller shows weren't happening because of all, like, the interest rates and the pending strikes. So you don't want to start making a movie and then have to shut down because of a strike if you don't have, like, the money to hold everybody.
Right.
And I'm sure you know the answer. Just follow the money. Just follow the money. That's where the answer is. So what we named off some of your larger projects you worked on. What were some of your favorite projects?
Stranger Than Fiction is definitely one. I, Tonya is definitely one. Those are probably the top two that I can think of. I mean, there's, you know, I've worked on, like, small movies that basically have no budget, and then the Marvel movies are always fun because it's like you get to see all this stuff like right up close, and you get to see how, you know, all of the special effects works, and you get to watch the visual effects people doing their thing to, you know, because you see them working with basically nothing, and then you go and see the movie, and then you see the magic that the VFX team has put in there, and it's really amazing because you know you're watching what they're watching while they're making, and you're like, that's just an open field. And then when the movie comes out, you're like, okay, there's a, you know, there's a dragon and there's a spaceship and there's, you know, all that other stuff. First Man was amazing. Because that was, well, one, they, I got to go to NASA and just, you know, be around the vehicle assembly building and the crawler. And then that, actually on that movie, I worked on the miniatures team mainly. And, you know, when I was interviewing for First Man, they said, well, why would you want to do this movie? I was like, you're asking me to be on the miniatures team. Like, I get to see my childhood be made, because when we grew up watching Star Wars, it's like they did all like the Millennium Falcon, all the spaceships with miniatures.
Yeah.
And it's like, now I get to see this happening from like the beginning to the end. That's incredible. Yeah. It was fascinating.
It is
extremely
cool.
Fascinating.
I was just saying, that's why I love the films and movies. It's because it's just like all these little pieces, and then it's just like, boom. But there's so much in between the little piece and the finished project. And that's where the work is appreciated. That's why I love it.
So I know we were talking about Marvel being one of your favorites. So I think, Justin, you showed me this meme. So Justin is a big DC guy. Yes. And Justin, you might even show us your tattoo. you gonna show us, Justin? Oh, he's going to give us a little peek. Okay. He's a huge Batman fan. Well, that's all I'll tell you. But there's a meme I saw that had two. It said Marvel movies. And it said lights, camera, action, and it said Marvel movies. And then this one said DC movies, and it just said camera, action. So Marvel being the lights, camera, action, which are just amazing, bright, iridescent, just things, awesome things. And DC is just camera, action, no lights, very dark, very dim, very, it's what it seems like. And I think that holds true. Have you worked on DC stuff?
No, I don't think I have. No, I haven't done anything with DC.
Okay.
So I don't. And it's, even if I had, like, there's just, it's so light and bright when you're shooting it, even if it's still a dark scene. And a lot of that just happens in post-production. Yeah. That's where the magic happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I love, we're talking about lighting. So I love it when something I've learned is, a lot of the times, the scenes at night. So next time you go watch an action movie, if you've watched a scene at night, it was like the moon is out and it's all bright and stuff. It was probably filmed during the day and they just changed the gradient, so they turned it down. So they just turned day from night.
Yeah, they night can. They sometimes. Can do that. There's a lot of speculation, I think, on how we do things, and the reality is, a lot of times not even close to that. Just because it's not easy to convert day to night or night to day. It can be done, but it's challenging. And unless you really plan to do that, it's not something you can just do on the fly. Like, you can't just show up and be like, all right, we're going to do this and we're going to make it look like the night, 'cause we're going to tweak the LUT in post-production or whatever it is. You still have to plan for it. So, and sometimes we have, like, one movie I did, we had a shot that was supposed to be shot at night, but because of all of our troubles throughout the day, or actually throughout the night, because we shot overnight, when it came time to shoot this one scene, it was very much dawn, pretty much daylight. And, you know, but sometimes you have to do it and then try and fix it later.
Right.
Gotcha.
I've been pretty quiet throughout this podcast so far, Alex, because the intricacies of it are, incredibly interesting. Like, just hearing all the little parts and pieces that are moving and just to produce this massive movie, like we've mentioned before, like, it's very interesting. But I've got two questions for you, man. I got two. I'll hit you with the first one. The first one is, we haven't even touched on this topic yet of you, Alex. You were a roommate of this guy right down here, Pete Peters, for 2 years. And I asked you before the podcast started what kind of stories we were going to say. So we'll see if you'll let any fly. But I want to hear and I think the viewers want to hear too, the craziest story you have about Double P down here when you guys were in college together. Because I'm sure
there's some crazy two that nights. So the first one, back when I was young, you know, in the late 90s, actually it was the mid 90s. So when you get into back then, when you got into college, they send you a packet. They're like, here's who your roommate's going to be. Here's their phone number. So you can call them and talk to them. And, you know, my roommate was supposed to be somebody else. And I had called them and left them a message, never heard from them. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then I got to the dorm on day one and I, you know, went up to the door and it had my name on it. And then it said Peter B. Peterson. I'm like, there's no way someone's named Peter Peterson. This has got to be a joke. Maybe I just don't have a roommate. And then I think it was like the next day you moved in. I'm like, okay, there really is someone named Peter Peterson. Here we go. This is going to be great. And then another thing that, and this is, as I get comfortable admitting how old I am now and how much things have changed, one of the things I like to harp on the youngins about, that I honestly feel that they are missing out on this, because this is one of the memories that has stuck with me for so long. And, you know, like, my kid isn't going to get to do this. Your kids aren't going to get, they're not going to get to do it this way. So we wanted to go see Marilyn Manson, but the show was sold out. So Pete was like, well, let's see if we can get scalp tickets. And back then that meant you had to get like your local music magazine. So Scene Magazine for us, you know, Creative Loafing in another neighborhood, you know, other cities. I knew that was one they had. And so we got the Scene Magazine. He found a number in the back of the magazine. You call this guy that you've never talked to before. And, you know, you're negotiating with a complete stranger. And you're like, okay, well, let's meet at this BP station on the east side of Cleveland at 10 o'clock on a Thursday. And, you know, this whole while you're thinking, okay, well, one, I hope I don't get shot or stabbed because we're going to East Cleveland on a Thursday night. And then are these tickets this guy is selling us, are they going to be real? Are they going to be counterfeit? We don't know until we get to the show. And so we met the guy, we bought the tickets. He seemed totally legit. He explained why he scalps tickets because I don't think he was asking a lot more than face value. It was a little more. And then we go to the show and we get in, we're like, this is fantastic. And, you know, we have this whole story about like trying not to die just to go see a band. And then we ended up at Taco Bell after the show. We were standing in line and I remember there was some kid in front of us who's definitely drunk. And I already had like a big handful of napkins. And we were talking to this kid and he had like a giant piece of burrito on his shirt. And I hand this kid some napkins. And he just looks and goes, oh, thanks, man. And then he puts them in his pocket. I mean, that's just your standard college, you know, dumb fun, but.
No, wait, tell us more about the Manson concert.
I don't know
concert.
If I really remember. I mean, you said I got kicked in the head.
You got a.
Probably.
You got a lump on your head.
Probably.
That's what I remember. I thought it was from to this day when,
it might
when
have
Manson
been.
Threw the mic into the crowd.
Yeah.
He wound up and threw the mic into the crowd. And I remember the cord was still attached. And you got blasted, or maybe you got blasted from being in the pit or whatever. And everybody was taken on the cord like this. And I remember like two sides of the room was just swaying like this on the microphone cord. And he was up there on stage ripping pages out of a Bible and chanting and doing all this crazy shit.
He was.
But it was awesome. Yeah. I mean, it was a shock value kind of thing.
It was a good show.
They rocked, dude. I'm not sure who the guitarist was at the time, but they always had some good jams, man. He definitely put on a good show. That was at the Agora in Cleveland. We seen a lot of good bands up there. I think you were even pulled up on stage at one point.
Oh, that
you were
was
playing
the
guitar
that was,
with
yeah,
one of the
that
bands.
Was, that was in the ballroom. Wow, that was weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
You gotta love it. Rockstar for a night.
See, I knew we had some good stories.
Yeah, they've redone the Agora. They've definitely cleaned it up, and it's there's a part of me that feels like the erased part of my childhood, because there was this, you know, you romanticize the smell of that venue post show where it's like cigarettes and stale beer and just sweat, and it smells terrible. But it's just, I don't know. Yeah, your ears are still ringing.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The charm of the
smell brings back nostalgia.
So I will say this too. I probably partied a little too much in college. I know Alex did some partying as well, but Alex, you were more focused on, you know, working and extracurricular activities and being, you know, and you were part of, so you were part of the
programming board.
What do you want to call it? The programming board. So you were always connecting with the musicians that would come into town.
Oh my God.
You would party backstage with Coolio. I think you smoked a blunt. Yeah, remember that time you smoked a blunt with Coolio?
That happened. That definitely did not happen. Yeah, I mean, when you're working the shows, you're around everybody, and it's one of the things that you know, when I was doing more of the rock and roll production stuff, and I eventually got to a point where I'm like, you know, I'm not going to use any of this information. It's just, I don't know if I want to do it anymore. And then it just sort of film happened, and there was a lot of similarities. Instead of like going from like venue to venue to venue, you're pretty much in one spot for about a month or so making the show instead of like one night at a venue. And then the more I got involved in film production, you realize like, oh, there's a lot of the equipment that we use that's the same. And then a couple years ago, I ended up on a movie in Alabama that had a large rock and roll component to it. And it took place between 99 and 2001, which is when I was doing most of the rock and roll backstage roadie kind of stuff. And nobody on this movie that I did really took ownership of the rock and roll aspect. And it just sort of like fell on my shoulders to be like, okay, well, this is how we're going to do this. And this is what we're going to do for the stage and the field. And like all of the stuff that I thought was just useless knowledge at the time was, you know, very, very helpful. And again, this is one of the stories I tell you kids these days, cool, is you don't know like the menial jobs you have early in your life, you think they're really not going to benefit you somehow. And what amazes me is that always somehow it does.
Yep.
Yes. Mm. It usually shows itself later. Yeah. Cool.
Great advice.
Mm-hmm. I went and talked to my alma mater high school, or my alumni high school, whatever you want to call it, last year. And that's something I told the kids. I was like, listen, even if you work at freaking Wendy's, man, there's something you can take from that that's going to boost you in your next career. I worked for a debt collection agency before I got into real estate. I never thought that collecting debt would help me in real estate. Oh my gosh. It's been a massive help, because, you know, it's a sales job that you don't even realize it's a sales job when you're doing it. There's just so many. I love that quote, because you can take experiences from, you can take, you know, lessons from almost any experience you have in life.
It's interesting and how it works out.
Let me circle back to question number two here.
Okay.
I told you I had two questions. First one was next one is this. So you're a movie guy, you're a TV show guy. Mm-hmm. Regardless of if you worked on it or not, what are your top three movies and your top three TV shows?
Top three movies? Back to the Future Part 1, Terminator 2, Clue. Top TV shows.
Damn, classic.
I don't really watch a lot of TV. I watch a lot of This Old House. Like, I went back to season, I've started back at season one and I'm working my way through. I've never really been a TV guy. Two more movies.
Let's put Singles, two more movies on.
Which is a Cameron Crowe movie. What's another one? I mean, there's like the obligatory Star Wars movies, but I mean, Stranger Than Fiction is probably one of my favorite movies. And it's not just because I worked on it. I think it's a really well done movie. And I think you have, you know, it's a Will Ferrell movie, but it's not your typical Will Ferrell movie, because he's not trying to be funny. He's serious in the movie. Yep. And it's just very well shot and very well made. Kind of disappointed that didn't get the acclaim that I think it deserved. But, you know, if there's every once in a while, there's like a Reddit thread where, same question, like, what's one of your favorite movies that no one's ever heard of? And, you know, it doesn't take me long to scroll before someone mentions Stranger Than Fiction. And that's always like, okay, that sort of redeems it, because it's, you know, still has a following, and there are a lot of people that love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Excellent stuff.
Shenanigans. Oh, Waiting.
Brian Reynolds. The restaurant.
Yeah, movie? No. Was Shenanigans the name of the restaurant they worked at in Waiting?
Yes, that's what it is. Shenanigans was the restaurant. Yes. I laughed my ass off because I had just finished working at McDonald's. And so it's like, oh my gosh. That's all this stuff is real.
Biggie, now you didn't show us the tattoo, but are you going to show us any of the penis tricks from the movie Waiting?
The Batwing?
I don't know them.
The Batwing. The sailboat.
Yeah.
That movie is something.
I remember
else.
That one.
The sequel wasn't great, but first one was really good. The sequel to Waiting? Still Waiting?
Which one? I didn't know there was a sequel.
I never watched it. It's one of those where they like they try to capitalize on it and nothing happens.
Don't worry about it.
That's funny.
You're Peterson.
Alex Capaldi. Thank you, my man. Appreciate you. Hey, we're up over, man. Are we up 40 minutes yet?
Yeah.
Wow. Man, that was a great conversation. I thought of another question though before I let you go. Do you have the script of the next Hollywood blockbuster? Have you written a script?
No, read
or
a lot of them.
Scripts?
I've probably read and done, you know, early budgetary work on more movies than I'll probably ever work on in my life. Just because there's a lot of stuff, you know. So I'm like, hey, can you do a budget for or a schedule for this? And you read it, and then you do the work, and then it just doesn't go anywhere. But I will also say it is amazing how frequently real estate and realtors come into play in the film industry. Just because a lot of times, like, we're looking for a house, whether it's we want to shoot in something or somebody wants to, you know, live in a house. Because a lot of times, you know, people don't want to live in hotels for the rest, you know, for 7 months. So they try and find a house. And the one thing I always do tell people who are interested in renting their homes to people, especially to a shooting crew, whether it's a commercial for a day or a movie for a week or two, they're going to break stuff. We're going to break stuff. If you have something valuable in the room, take it out. If you really like your floors, don't let us in there. We'll break something. If you're getting ready to do a renovation, totally let us in.
I love that.
Totally let us come shoot in your house.
Yeah. Right.
Let them shoot inside the flip.
Be transparent up front with them. This is what's going to happen. Are you down with it or not? Love it. All right, Alex, JP, Justin, any final thoughts here, guys?
No, I appreciate you coming
along.
It was a hell of a conversation. So,
yeah, not too often we get to talk to a big time Hollywood guy yourself.
I like paying
Alex,
my bills.
Appreciate those stories.
That's the push behind the work. I like being able to pay my bills and keep food on the table.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, Alex Capaldi, production manager, production supervisor on such big budget films as Captain America, Winter Soldier, Spider-Man, Homecoming, The Hunger Games, not to mention many more. Man, thank you for your time. And thank you. Yeah, thank you. And thank you for listening and watching the Dream Huge podcast. How can folks follow you online?
I don't really have much. I mean, I have an Instagram, but I don't really do a whole lot on there. I just don't really have much of an online presence.
Gotcha.
No Facebook. I mean, I don't really do anything on LinkedIn.
That's because we're from the late 90s. We went to college in the late 90s, so we don't sometimes don't document every single thing like
don't.
The teens these days.
Yeah, I guess
yeah. Well, what's just happening?
Sure. Yeah, they can check me out there if they really want to see. I mean, if they want to see what I've been working on.
Yeah.
That's probably about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, All right.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, man. All right, and thank you for watching the Dream Huge podcast. Thank you, JP, and thank you, Biggie. Call JP and Biggie for all your real estate needs. These guys are killing it as always. Appreciate you guys very much. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule as well to do the Dream Huge podcast. And folks, remember to like, subscribe, and share. And as always, remember the rules. Work hard, never give up, and dream huge. Let's see the guns, Alex. Oh, Alex has got the guns.
Thank you for listening to the Dream Huge podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. For more inspiring content, follow us on Instagram and Facebook @Dream Huge Realty and on TikTok @Dream Huge Inc.
Until next time.